Local news, culture, and NPR.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua has a Hooked on Ice fishing report for the Upper Delaware River area. Community members share sentiments about preserving the historic single-lane Skinner's Falls Bridge that spans the Delaware River between Milanville, Pennsylvania, and Coshocton, New York. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. An American man was among three hostages that Hamas released in Gaza today in exchange for more than 180 Palestinian prisoners and detainees released from Israeli jails. It's the fourth exchange since a ceasefire took effect, as NPR's Jerome Sokolowski reports from Tel Aviv.
A crowd in Tel Aviv watched the release on a jumbotron as 65-year-old Keith Siegel was taken to Israel. Daniel Lifshitz is the grandson of a hostage who was released earlier in the war and says he got to know Siegel's wife, Aviva.
I think America should be so happy for that a woman like Aviva got Keith Siegel, which is an American citizen, and we are so, so thankful to President Trump.
Many Israelis believe Trump pressured Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu into accepting a ceasefire with Hamas. Lifshitz has one other grandparent still being held hostage. He's 84 years old. Jerome Sokolowski, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Now to Africa, where the UN says at least 700 people have been killed in a week of heavy fighting between the army and a rebel militia in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Kate Bartlett reports that after taking Goma, the rebels are advancing towards another provincial capital.
Hundreds have been killed in just a few days of fighting in eastern DRC, the World Health Organization said Friday. Several thousand others have been wounded. Around 300,000 people have been sheltering in displacement sites on the outskirts of Goma, another UN body said. The Rwanda-backed M23 militia sent the region into crisis when they seized the city last Sunday. The group is now advancing towards Bukavu, another key town. The M23 has vowed to eventually take the capital, Kinshasa, on the other side of the country. For NPR News, I'm Kate Bartlett in Johannesburg.
A major strike at Costco stores appears to have been averted for now after the powerful Teamsters Union announced a last-minute tentative agreement for a new contract without providing details. NPR's Amy Held reports that membership will now vote on it.
The announcement came just hours after the collective bargaining agreement expired, and the union said the roughly 8% of the company's workforce it represents would stop working. That's 18,000 Costco workers in six states, including New York, California, and Washington, where the company is based. Costco had recently announced raises for non-union entry-level workers of $20 an hour and around $30 for clerks and assistants. The union workers were demanding a contract they say better reflects the company's sales and growth. In the last fiscal year, Costco's revenue grew 5% to more than $250 billion. It operates more than 600 U.S. stores. Amy Held, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News.
Hey, this is DJ Chucks of Old School Sessions. Please join me and Selector Starkey at our new time, 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. Saturday night.
Old school, baby. Old school, baby. Old school, baby. Old school, baby.
That's Old School Sessions right here on WJFF, 8 to midnight, Saturday night, only on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution cfosny.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua has a Hooked on Ice fishing report for the Upper Delaware River area. Community members Aaron Feely Nahem, Tom Candela, and Peter Van Slyke share their sentiments about preserving the historic single-lane Skinner's Falls Bridge that spans the Delaware River between Milanville, Pennsylvania, and Coshocton, New York. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Throughout February and extending into early May, the opportunity will exist to see a seasonal phenomenon known as zodiacal light. Zodiacal light is a hazy pyramid of light rising from the western horizon after sunset. This light will be visible low in the western sky up to an hour after twilight. Zodiacal light is sunlight that is being reflected off dust grains in the inner solar system. These dust grains spread out along the ecliptic and are thought to be the remnants of the process that created Earth and the other planets in our solar system 4.5 billion years ago. The grains of dust cannot be seen individually. Rather, their tiny outputs of light combine to create a faint glow. This hazy, faint, pyramid-shaped glow is milkier in appearance than the Milky Way. Dark skies are needed to see the zodiacal light. While the moon will be in the evening sky this week, it will not be bright enough to impair viewing conditions for the zodiacal light. Conditions will be more favorable at the beginning of the week than at the week's end. Since zodiacal light is faint, it helps to use a trick known as averted vision. Averted vision is looking slightly off from where you are wanting to look. The most sensitive part of the retina is not in the center, but along the outer edge. Looking off allows the light to hit the most sensitive part of your retina, increasing the chance of seeing the object. Be sure to look to the west just after nightfall this week to try to spy the zodiacal light. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill and Farm and Country, this is Evan Padua bringing you Hooked on Fishing. Or should I say, Hooked on Ice Fishing. For the first time in quite a few years, we are having a winter with reliable ice for recreating on. But first things first, make sure the ice is safe before heading out on it too far. Be sure to drill a hole and determine that the ice is thicker than 3 inches minimum for walking on. Most lakes and ponds should be safe after all this cold weather we've been having. Some folks are even out on the Delaware River, in select locations, targeting walleye, in places that have still water and smooth, safe ice. Ice fishing has always taken a second to open water fishing, for me personally. But I know a lot of people absolutely love getting out on the ice. Most folks will gather their friends and families, grab a grill, some tip-ups, some jigging poles, and go spend a weekend afternoon hanging out on the ice, grilling some hot dogs and burgers, and catching a few fish. Most folks will use a tip-up. A tip-up is a method where one can set a line with live bait, walk away, and then when a fish hits it, a flag will shoot up in the air while the fish is holding on to the bait. Perch and crappie, known as panfish around here, are often the target species while ice fishing in ponds and lakes. These fish make a great meal with some light breading and some hot oil in a frying pan. Targeting areas of known summer weed lines, drop-offs, and depth changes are good intel when selecting an ice fishing spot. Small fathead minnows and mealworms are good baits for attracting panfish and other species too. Mealworms are a beetle larva often used to tip or apply to the hook of a small jigging spoon for ice fishing. Best of luck to all you ice fishermen and women out there. Be sure to make sure the ice is safe and have fun. Flag up! For Radio Catskill, Farm and Country, and Hooked on Fishing, this has been Evan Padua, casting off.
On Sunday, January 12th, members of our Delaware River Valley community gathered inside the Union Building in Narrowsburg, New York, a large red brick structure that was once a Sullivan County school. The Delaware Hall was buzzing with folks sharing music, poetry, and sentiments in celebration of the Skinner's Falls Bridge that stands in Milanville, Pennsylvania. Built in 1902, the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Milanville is listed on the U.S. Register of Historic Places. Like anything else that's over 100 years of age, it's in need of maintenance and repair. But the Skinner's Falls Bridge is in danger of being torn down and not replaced. There are so many people that want this bridge to remain part of our Milanville community. Because it has unique architectural and structural ornamentation, the Skinner's Falls Bridge represents historic value to the Delaware River Valley and the Milanville Historic District. I spoke with many participants who expressed their cherished sentiments. Here are community members Aaron Feely Nahem, Tom Candela, and Peter Van Slyke.
My name is Aaron Feely Nahem. We live on Skinner Falls. We're a little A-frame up on the top of the hill. And that bridge was very important. When we bought our house, 25 years ago now, it was very important to have the community on both sides of the bridge. Some of our best friends and the places we would go and buy our peaches and the Milanville store were very important in our daily life. One of the reasons we chose to live on Skinner Falls was the fact that we had the river right at our doorstep. We would walk across or drive our car, and after they had even closed it down and no longer allowed vehicles, we would take our bikes and we'd be able to go down River Road and visit our friends. It's been a terrible experience to be divided. And then the bridge is so special within the community, where the birds are singing, you know, and flying on the water underneath and living underneath the bridge, and you have the eagles watching the river, watching them hunt and fish. And I mean, it's the biggest part of our community is the love of both sides around that bridge. That's Skinner Falls. Love it. We have to save it. So, I remember asking a politician, Delgado, when he was right under, what's going on, and, you know, it's PennDOT. So they're telling us New York has no say. It's crazy that New York has no say. It's the Skinner Falls Bridge, Skinner Falls. Thank you, Rosie.
Peter Van Slyke. So I'm a civil engineer, and I work on bridges. I've been on about 12 bridges around the Sullivan County area, and I work as a resident engineer and inspector on bridge construction and heavy highway.
Okay, so you have experience with these bridges that cross the Delaware River.
That's correct. Some of them across Delaware and some across other rivers as well.
Are you familiar with the architectural or the structural aspects of the Skinner's Falls Bridge?
I only know that it's a truss bridge and then it's on natural stone abutments and pier.
Well, do you have any personal experience or any kind of personal sentiments that you have about the Skinner's Falls Bridge?
I'm very opinionated about it because I've looked at it, but not up in detail. I think it would be nice to replace it with a similar truss bridge. I think removing the members and categorize them is ridiculous because it adds a huge amount of expense to it, whereas you could just categorize the members and buy new ones instead of having 120-year-old ones, and the removal would be a fraction of the cost of removing them member by member. If you replace the entire superstructure, then you would have to rehab the abutments and the pier, which I would think could be done. They would just have to go down through the upper rocks and rehab them as best they could and repoint them, or maybe put a concrete cap on them. I don't know. It would have to be studied in detail, but those are have been my impressions for a long time on this bridge. Obviously, they spent almost $4 million studying it. I hope they do something.
Now, you said you had experience with the other crossings, the other bridge crossings. I'm familiar with the Coshecton crossing, and then Pond Eddy has a crossing. Are you familiar with those?
On the Pond Eddies, I know it was debated a lot because there's not that many homes on the other side. I'm not familiar with the process that went into planning or anything like that.
Are you familiar with the Kellam Stalker Bridge?
Not really. I know when it was worked on, but I'm just not, because we get sort of isolated and pigeonholed into our particular projects. I'm on one in Yulin now, which is a $4 million job. It's not quite done yet. So Yulin is 25 minutes from where we're standing here now.
Well, describe that bridge.
The Yulin Bridge fell under an unusual rule that's come up, where they're planning for storms that are theoretical, that are a lot bigger than 100-year storms. So they're called one-half of a probable maximum flood storm, which is huge. So the original bridge in Yulin was 40 feet long, and the new one is 100 feet long to accommodate a bigger flood. So the dam there had a bridge over it. So to replace one, you had to replace the other. So we did replace the dam with a 100-foot-long dam, and then replaced the bridge above it pretty much in record time. And we did all that this last summer. They're just smaller details that still need to be done.
Let's talk about the Coshecton Bridge and the Skinner's Falls Bridge. Can you actually compare them for age and structure and character? I know visually they're different. Coshecton Bridge, to me, is extremely functional. You have a walkway for pedestrians. It doesn't have the architectural sentimental beauty that Skinner's Falls has. But because it's so functional and practical and the work gets done quickly, it's very appealing to me. But give me your comparative expression.
Well, I don't think that the Skinner's Falls Bridge is designed to carry the load and the traffic that the Coshecton Bridge does, so it would not require such a massive structure. Beyond that, to make a comparison, it's probably better for somebody that's studied them more in detail. I will say that when you have natural stone abutments like Skinner's Falls, the natural materials last longer. Let's compare it to the Brooklyn Bridge, which was built around 1888, I think, and it's still in very good condition. And that's with natural stone abutments and piers and all that. So that's a big plus for the Skinner's Falls Bridge, is that hopefully the pier and the abutments, if the top parts are rehabbed, they'd be very functional and it would save the cost of replacing those substructures. Mainly talking about replacing the superstructure, which is a deck and the trusses.
I really appreciate what you have to say. If there's anything else you'd like to add, I'm just sentimental like Ed Wesley about this bridge. It's the feeling I have when I'm on the bridge, or used to be able to go on the bridge. The river is undulating underneath the bridge. There's birds flying in all the trusses. And you're looking at a scene as if you were in a Currier and Ives painting by Fanny Palmer. It's romantic ideas that I have about this bridge, sentimental. I love the wood that your feet walk over. And when you used to be able to drive a car, the planks would be pinging.
We can have both with this bridge. And we have had both. It was functional and it's aesthetic. And we could have that again. But if it's trying to demolish it, then it won't be there in the future.
For me, all politics aside, I think this bridge represents a greatness in America. And when people say, make America great, I want to keep America great. This is an example of American greatness. It's in history. It's functional. It's beautiful. It was made in America by American parts. Every aspect of this bridge is the things you're proud about in America. So that's, I'm going to stick to that.
If they just replace it in a common sense way, the way I think I've described it, it would go pretty smoothly and probably everybody would be satisfied. But if they got all stuck on whatever rules they're coming up with or whatever problems they see about rules and all that sort of thing, then the wheels will just keep spinning and nothing will get done. So I hope it gets replaced.
Thank you. Offering what you have. And over here we have your buddy Tom.
Hello. Well, this is Tom Candela. I just like to ask Pete what he thinks about the demolition method that they plan on actually using explosives and how that would, if you might think that might affect the river itself and transportation and the folks coming on the river to enjoy the river. Are they going to have to close sections of the river in order to do that?
There was a meeting maybe a couple months ago about all that, and I didn't recall them saying anything about explosives, so hearing that today was for a first. They were talking about putting a causeway halfway across the river, so it would be like a shoal going across, so it would change the river traffic some. I don't know. With explosives, they're going to have to get the stuff out of the river. They came up with three or four different plans, and as usual, who owned the adjacent land and all that became an important consideration, so I don't know about explosives because they have to make sure there are no river hazards and stuff.
Pete and I belong to an organization called the National Canoe Safety Patrol, and we work as volunteers rescuing people on the river during the season, and we use skinners all the time. That's one of our main hotspots where we have a lot of rescues. And so I'm concerned about if they start to demolish this bridge, and I would imagine they're going to do it springtime, summer, how that's going to affect the community as well as people coming into our community who enjoy the river and enjoy canoeing and kayaking and tubing in that area, because Skinner's Falls is a big draw. So that's what I think there's a lot of uncertainty about that and no answers. You know, we have no answers. And to hear today, for the first time for me, too, that they plan to use explosives, it's like, wait a minute, where's the rubble going to go? In the water? You know, how's that going to affect the environment, the fish, and that sort of thing? So I guess it's all up in the air right now. We just have to wait and see.
Well, I appreciate your practical comments on this. Do you have any sentiments about the Skinner's Falls Bridge? Do you have experience playing around it?
I do. I live right up the road from it. I mean, literally not even a mile up the road from Skinner's on the Pennsylvania side. And it's a beautiful bridge. I used to love the sound of your car going over it on those wooden planks. It reminds me I'm home, you know, as I'm crossing it. Oh, I'm home now because you hear that. And I used it all the time to get to work in Calicoon or to travel back to New Jersey when I went that way. So there's a lot of nostalgia for me. Now, I'm only in the area 21, 23 years, something like that. So I don't have as much of the emotional attachment to it. But I still have, you know, it's our bridge, you know. I still feel like it's our bridge. And it's been gone since actually longer than 2019, right? Because they would fix it and shut it down and fix it and shut it down again and then finally just shut it down. And my opinion is that they never had any intention to fix that bridge. Because if they did, they wouldn't have spent $4 million figuring out what to do next. They would have taken that $4 million and started fixing the bridge. So my opinion, again, is PennDOT is basically saying, or we're hoping that we kind of forget about it. You know, and all the arguments that we did present at the meetings of how the community needed it, how it was important for EMS and first responders to use that bridge, They were just waiting to say, see, it's been gone 5 years. You don't need it. I think that was their method. But we'll see. I really hope that people stand up and fight for it and that they prevent it from doing it.
You're accurate. Going back to something you said a minute ago, in 2016, the bridge was closed, and the River Reporter here in town has articles referencing those closures of the bridge. So 2019 is not the only time that bridge was closed.
Right. They close it, and they would make quick repairs. I think they replaced some of the planks. And then you would drive by it, you know, go out, use it for a year or so, and then suddenly it was closed again. And then they just closed it completely. And again, I really think they had no intention of really fixing that bridge. They're saying, well, not enough people live here. Not enough people use it, you know. And I think that was their mentality. It's not worth the money to them. And that's what they've been doing. And they just say, let's see if we wait long enough that people will say, forget about it, or we can prove that they really don't need it, because guess what? EMS still works. They have to go all the way around to the Narrowsburg Bridge, or they have to go down to Kachekton in order to get to that side or move around. You know, if there's an accident like when we're on the river, there are times when we have to call EMS, you know, and sometimes it takes a long time to get to us because of access. So it's unfortunate, but I'm very enthusiastic, or I'm feeling good about this meeting and people coming here and seeing everybody really energized about saving the bridge, and I hope it happens. It looks like we're going to have to do illegal. You know, I think that's the way it's going to have to go.
The plan originally for the demolition was supposed to start this month in January, so maybe meetings like this have given pause to think it over and, like Tom says, pursue the legal route a little bit more.
Well, I thank you both for your comments, and your sentiments are echoed by many in this room. You're not alone in your feeling, your thoughts, and your facts. So I very much appreciate you sharing your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Those were community members Aaron Feely-Nahem, Tom Candela, and Peter Van Slyke. You can view all the January 12th Skinner's Falls Bridge Celebration event performances on the WJFF Radio Catskill Facebook page. More information on the history of Skinner's Falls Bridge is available online, tomrue.net/sfbridge. Important information updates regarding the Skinner's Falls Bridge and the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, PennDOT, are available on the DCS website, DamascusCitizensForSustainability.org.
This bridge has crossed a great divide of history in the making, a world where future hopes collide and dreams are for the taking. If we change the story, the bridge would take us there. We can save our future or build a bridge to nowhere. Isn't it worth saving? Isn't it worth saving? Isn't it worth saving? Save it all from the wrecking ball. Save it all from the wrecking ball.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard, Sweetwater Fishing Guide Evan Padua, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, community members Erin Feely-Nahem, Tom Candela, and Peter Van Slyke, for sharing their sentiments about preserving the historic single-lane Skinner's Falls Bridge. Featured in today's show is music of Poison Love Band, Milanville community members Joanne Brinkerhoff on guitar and Dan Brinkerhoff on violin and banjo, composed this music inspired by preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge. You can find Poison Love Band on their Facebook page. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations,